Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose. Cutting down to the truth through history and experience. The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bone's Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge. Email kfr@scalpeledge.com or the website scalpeledge.com. The next episode of The Scalpel starts now.
Welcome to The Scalpel. This is Dr. Keith Rose. There is a lot going on today. There's a lot going on in the United States of America, and there's a lot going on in the world we live in. Like most of you, I watch the news sources, the ones that I feel are at least moderately accurate, and I do my research, and I see a nation, our nation, that was founded on biblical principles by men of great virtue, not perfect men, but men of integrity, that put forth a form of government never seen in the history of the world. A form of government that has birthed and provided the fruit of freedom. And because of that freedom, while the United States of America is less than 4% of the world's population, it has produced almost exclusively all of the great recent discoveries our world has seen. You could talk about Carrier in the air conditioner. You could talk about Ford in the automobile, the Wright brothers in the airplane. You could talk about the internet, electricity, the telephone. You could talk about the elevator. You could talk about satellites. You could talk about a lot of things that happened in a country that is extremely young as far as countries go, or a government that is really young as far as governments go, but one that has produced more than all other governments combined, and that reason is freedom. And right now, the big buzzwords we're hearing are critical race theory. I agree with my friend Charlie Kirk when he says that he believes critical race theory is the progressive liberals really jumping the shark, really pushing too hard, too fast for their progressive Marxist agenda. And everyday Americans are pushing back, and it didn't matter what color they are. You have people of color and white people pushing back. You have old people and young people pushing back. You have a lot of people pushing back because critical race theory flies in the face of everything this nation was founded on. And it is based on a lie. And it is just propagated by more lies, because this nation wasn't founded by a bunch of white supremacists. This nation was not founded by people that wish to perpetuate a, quote, white race. No, this nation was founded by men of great faith. And most of them were Christian men. And there was that faith and the understanding of grace and all that God had done for them, which led these men, these founders, to plant the seeds to eradicate slavery in our nation. The first conference, the first anti-slavery conference held in America before it was even the United States was in 1775 in Pennsylvania, and it was held by a gentleman by the name of Benjamin Franklin. But the liberals don't want you to know that. They don't want you to know that 9 states abolished slavery even before the Constitution was ratified. They don't want you to know that. They don't want you to know there was a sundowning clause in the Constitution to end the importation of slaves that Thomas Jefferson signed the moment he could, and it went on, and Quincy Adams finished it out. They don't want you to know that. They also don't want you to know about another gentleman who is not a gentleman of color, but I will tell you, he is the father of the abolitionist movement. A great man. Now, from those liberals that are listening, and I know there's some out there that do, we get your hate mail. For you that are listening, this man wasn't even American. He was British. His name was William Wilberforce. And this was a small statue of a man. He was about 5'3". And probably around 95 pounds to 100 pounds soaking wet. Yet his small stature did not stop his amazing driving character that pushed for the complete abolition of slavery, and something else that historians will talk about if you look back, but a lot of people in the liberal media will never mention. You see, William Wilberforce was the subject of a great movie called Amazing Grace, not too long ago, within the past 20 years. Because it tells a story of a man who had conviction and felt that slavery was wrong. And I just want to tell you today, and it's going to be a short podcast, but I think it's one that will touch your heart, because I'm going to tell you about his life, and then I'm going to explain to you how his character and his life is a blueprint for us to save this nation, to save America. How a small Englishman living his life can give us a blueprint to save our country. Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass spoke reverently of this great pioneer and father of the abolitionist movement. He lived during the same time as George Washington, and I'm sure they knew of each other, although I don't know that they ever met. There is documentation that he did meet Benjamin Franklin once. But after he abolished the slave trade in England and bringing liberty to the captives, an Italian statesman described Wilberforce as the Washington of humanity. So both George Washington and William Wilberforce were known as men who fought for freedom. When I first heard of this guy, Wilberforce, I wanted to understand more about him. I wanted to get into his head, because this relatively demure man did more in his life as I studied it than, and I'm not getting too far over my skis here, more than anyone that I have ever read about or know. This man is someone that who was born into great wealth and stature in England. In fact, when he was 12 years old, his parents sent him to be with some relatives to to just go stay with them for a little bit. I believe it was for a summer or such. And when he was with these relatives were, quote, Methodists. And you need to understand, at the time, Wilberforce was born in 1759. And during that time, in the late 1700s, people in England weren't real keen on religion. Oh, they were keen on the church, but they weren't keen on a personal relationship with God. There was a small group that were. They were called the Methodists. And the society in England would always say, oh, we love God, but those Methodists, they just, take it too far. And so when Wilberforce was 12 years old, his aunt and uncle introduced him to God, to Jesus, and he became a devout Christian, and he was growing in his faith until later that year, his parents heard that he was being indoctrinated in that Methodist religion and that was taking it, quote, too far. And so when his family found out about that, they quickly returned him back to his home so that they could, quote, set him straight. And at first, Wilberforce, in his mid-teens, he was following God, but he decided, with the endless parties and a lot of attention being shown him, and as he went to college at the age of 16, he went to Cambridge, he slowly backslid back into the world, back into the picture of a sophisticated worldliness. Historians note that William Wilberforce was a literal genius. He was a brilliant man, not only in mind, but able to articulate his thoughts. So when he entered Cambridge, he was immediately popular with everyone. He joined all the right clubs, and he met, quote, the right people. One of the people that he met was a gentleman by the name of William Pitt the Younger. And William Pitt would play a significant role in Wilberforce's life. William Pitt's father, William Pitt the Elder, was one of the most famous politicians and statesmen of the day in England. And so Pitt and Wilberforce would often travel from Cambridge to London and sit in a gallery of the House of Lords where they would observe parliamentary debates. And it was intoxicating to them. And Wilberforce at that point realized that he wanted to go into government. Once he had made his decision, Wilberforce wasted no time in being elected to Parliament at the earliest age allowable, just 2 weeks before his 20th birthday. And the young William Pitt followed fast on his friend's heels, gaining a seat just a few months after. And these two Cambridge graduates rocketed themselves to the head of the European elite. Because they had great personalities and, of note, great singing voices, they were invited to become member of the five exclusive gentlemen's clubs. And they weren't the gentlemen clubs like we think of today in England. Well, they might have been a little bit like that. These were known as polished dens of iniquity, where men could go drink, gamble, and do assorted things. But that's where celebrities, that's where the elite met and talked. And because Wilberforce and Pitt were so popular, they traveled the world. They went to France. They got to meet King Louis VI. They got to meet General Lafayette. And at the age of 24, Wilberforce was almost miraculously elected to an extremely significant position or seat in Parliament. It gave him a dramatic increase in visibility and political power. And at that same time, also at the tender age of 24, his friend Pitt was elected Prime Minister of England. So at the age of 24, William Wilberforce, born into wealth and had already ascended to one of the highest levels of the elite in the country of England. But something happened in 1784, and this is why it's important. Wilberforce decided to take a long vacation by traveling to the French and Italian Rivieras. Now, back then, they didn't have iPhones and airplanes. No, they had to travel by train. And Wilberforce was hoping that his cousin would travel with him because it was a long trip, and Wilberforce enjoyed talking. He enjoyed debate. Now, this is the same man that at 12 became a devout Christian but walked away from it because he heard the world calling. And he was a man of great intellectual horsepower. I'm sure we would probably describe him as an elite today, or how the elites like to describe themselves. The only difference is, and I'm going to show you, Wilberforce had something deeper inside of him. Now, during that time, when Wilberforce was getting ready to take that trip to the French and Italian Riviera, his friend who was going to ride with him had to bail. He couldn't go. And Wilberforce found himself at that time where he bumped into an old friend from childhood by the name of Isaac Milner, who was 10 years older than Wilberforce. Wilberforce had known Milner because his father was his headmaster when he was in secondary school. And Milner was now a Lucasian professor at Cambridge in a post once held by Isaac Newton. And as note, more recently held today by, or was most recently held by Stephen Hawking. So this was not a stupid person by any stretch, and that piqued Wilberforce's interest. Historians note, while Wilberforce was about 5'3", Milner was close to 7 feet tall. So you can imagine this virtual midget and this tall man traveling together on a train to the French and Italian Riviera. Milner jumped at the chance to ride with Wilberforce because he knew of his great intellect. And Wilberforce had this ticket already that his friend couldn't go with, so Wilberforce was glad for the company. But on that trip that I believe was over several weeks, and a conversation broke out. Now, Wilberforce describes this event, and he talks about how he was looking forward to great conversation. But he got more than he bargained for. Because eventually the conversation went from politics to the world, and then God came up, religion came up. And like everyone in his circles, Wilberforce thought that anyone who took God very seriously, you know, like I mentioned before, went too far. But something unusual happened. When he said this to Milner, Milner pushed back. He didn't agree. And when Wilberforce said whoever took God seriously went too far, Milner looked at him and said, not a bit. Because Milner was more serious about his faith than Wilberforce had been led to believe. And so immediately, Wilberforce writes, you know, he was not wanting to be on that train anymore, but he didn't have much choice. So the two began to discuss God and Christianity. And to his credit, Wilberforce was intellectually honest, and he didn't shrink from this robust debate. The back and forth between them continued across the Alps. Milner's intellect and vast learning on the subject were easily able to dispatch most of the objections to the faith that Wilberforce raised. And by the time their trip together had come to an end, Wilberforce was in the unpleasant and difficult spot of believing that he had been quite wrong in his previous views, and that Milner had been right. Wilberforce wrote that he became significantly distressed, and that he had come to believe with his whole mind that what he had been sure was false was in fact true. The God of the Bible existed. Jesus existed in history and was the promised Messiah, and the scriptures were not silly old myths, but the truth itself. Now, remember, he learned this from a guy that was a professor at Cambridge, someone that held the position that Stephen Hawking would one day hold, that Isaac Newton held before him. This is a brilliant man, though, of great faith. And because he rode on a train and had the courage of his conviction, he watered that seed that had been planted by Wilberforce's aunt and uncle when he was 12. So now Wilberforce is in an unusual, uncomfortable position. For someone with his social standing and prestige, he was in a very, quote, he wrote, curious and uncomfortable position because he didn't know what to do about it. He felt he was at a serious impasse because he realized when he went back to London, he couldn't re-enter his former life professing the things he had now come to believe because everyone would laugh at him. But he did have the courage of his conviction, so he wasn't showing up at the social clubs that he was a member of, and his friends were starting to wonder about him. In fact, someone wrote at that time they thought he was melancholy mad, which was just to say in that day and age, a state of depression. And actually, that probably wasn't far off the mark. Years later, Wilberforce in his writings referred to this period when he realized who God was, and more importantly, who he wasn't, as the Great Change. And he characterized it as a gradual process that took between 1 and 2 years. As an aside, I can identify with Wilberforce because it's what happened in my life a little over 10 years ago. And because of that change in Wilberforce's life, he decided to take on two of the greatest ills society was ever facing. He decided to take on the slave trade and one other thing, something they called the Reformation of Manners. And let me explain, you understand what the slave trade was and how evil it was, but Reformation of Manners was morality. because he had been, Wilberforce had been aware of the slave trade and how horrible it was. But he also was aware of the immorality in England during that period. He understood that alcoholism was rampant. He understood that there was a sex trade as well as a slave trade. And sexual trafficking of women was a staggering problem, and one whose scope is almost inconceivable, because fully 25% of all single women in London were prostitutes during that time, and their average age was 16. Yet this faith that Wilberforce had drove him to work on both of those problems. So where do we find ourselves in 2021? We know there was a man of great wealth who did not, and great prestige and popularity, who set it all aside to tackle the two biggest ills affecting people in his society. And he did it because of Christ, because of Jesus, because something in his heart told him he needed to do that. I encourage you to read about Wilberforce. There's some great books written on him. But I'm going to get to you the rest of the story here for you. Because Wilberforce, when he decided to do that, he realized it was an impossible task. And even John Wesley, the famous theologian, wrote him a letter, probably the last one Wesley wrote before he passed away. And in his letter, he told Wilberforce, "Unless the divine power has raised you up against this world, I see not how you can go through your glorious enterprise in opposing this villainy, which is the scandal of religion, of England, and of human nature." And he says, "Unless God has raised you up for this very thing, you will be worn out by the opposition of men," and listen to this, "and devils." Because what Wesley was saying is, men are going to come against you, and devils, spiritual warfare is going to come against you. Evil is going to come against you because you're trying to remove two of their main pillars. And he said, but Wesley went on to say this, "But if God be for you, who can be against you? Are all of them stronger than of God?" He says, "Don't be weary. You can do this. Go on in the name of God and the power of his might till American slavery," and he wrote, "the vilest that ever saw the sun shall vanish away before it." See, he knew that American slavery was wrong. John Wesley, he knew European slavery was wrong, and he was encouraging young Wilberforce to go after this, but only if that was what God was calling him to. And Wilberforce fought it. And I'll let you read the rest, but Wilberforce was successful in ending slavery in England. And it was only after 1808, when the slave trade was officially ended, did Wilberforce see that abolishing the slave trade alone was not enough. And he and others, and perhaps naively, hoped that by abolishing the trade, slavery would eventually die out. But they realized that wasn't the case and earnestly set themselves about abolishing slavery altogether, not just a trade. It was a decades-long battle, but in 1833, just 3 days before Wilberforce's death, he received a visitor that brought him extraordinary news that Parliament had voted to outlaw slavery. William Wilberforce completed the purpose that was created for in his lifetime. A man by the age of 24 who had wealth and prestige beyond anything most people can imagine. But someone who was faithful to God rode on a train with him, held the courage of his conviction, and ignited a seed that was planted in Wilberforce at the age of 12. And Wilberforce walked away from all of his friends, his prestige, and everything, and walked toward his purpose and abolished not only the slave trade, but slavery itself in England. He also did great work to end human trafficking. Now, neither one of those things were possible in the eyes of the world during that time. And I have a feeling Wilberforce thought that they weren't possible in his own power, but by the grace of God. And with great faith, Wilberforce was able to be successful. And I think we need to apply that today. I think that's the way we save America. We implant those seeds in children that are young, that talk to them about the Lord, talk to them about Christianity, because that is the source of freedom. Now, just like the mainstream elite in that period in England during the late 1700s, early 1800s, they said Christianity has a place, but they just take it too far sometimes. And they're saying even worse today in 2021. Yet there are people of great faith out there, and Christians and all people of faith, whether they be Jewish or other religions, are the most tolerant. Because when God is in our life, when Christ is on the throne, we don't judge. We move by conviction. We're powered by faith. And nothing is impossible. So today, in the year 2021, who will be the young William Wilberforce in the United States of America? Who will be the young folks that decide, or older folks, that they are going to take on the reformation of manners and morality, that they're going to push back against critical race theory, which is the new slave trade for all people in the United States? They're enslaving all cultures, all races, to an ideology that is nothing but smoke and mirrors, and allowing a small group of people to keep dissension at the highest level, to keep one group at another group's throat so they can keep and maintain power. Where education is no longer about education, but is about creating a pliable person who will believe what they're told, not ask questions, and take what they're given. We have a government that's passing out money for free. And I will tell you, like slavery, when you give someone something that they can do for themselves, you are enslaving them by that act. And you're preventing them from understanding and reaping the rewards of success of earning it themselves. You do them no favors. And you create a social invalid. Someone that will never rise up because there's no reason to try. Will just provide enough so they can get along. And basically, that's what slavery was back in the day. The slave masters, they gave the slaves health care. They gave the slaves money. Gave them just enough so they could get along, yet they never went to the next level. But here in the United States of America, where slavery was abolished just like England, all folks have the ability to go to that next level. All folks have the ability to succeed, because we all are born free and our rights come from God and not man. Because anything the government gives you, the government can take from you. So I would encourage you to look back at history. Understand the founding. Understand the great men of history like William Wilberforce that accomplished more in their lives. And that's just a fraction of what he did, by the way. When you talk about repealing or abolishing the slave trade in England, he did so much more. But he did it not on his own power, but the power of the Holy Spirit of God working through him. And I believe that still lives in this nation today. So I want to encourage you. Go to your school board meetings and be a Wilberforce. Have robust debate. Be polite, but be firm. And have the courage of your convictions and intellectual honesty. Because that's what it's going to take to change this nation. And it's going to take a Wilberforce in every school district. It's going to take a Wilberforce in every town hall. It's going to take a Wilberforce in every city hall, in every board meeting, even in the big corporations. It's going to take a Wilberforce. And that's just a metaphor for the grace of God and the power of faith inside of all of us, because we get to tap into the same thing that William Wilberforce did. It's readily available, and a lot of folks have it out there. It's just, will they use the gifts that God gave them to reach the purpose that they were created for? Thanks for spending some time with me this morning. Go out and have a great week, and hopefully I'll come to you again tomorrow if I can break free. And most importantly, let's keep freedom rolling. Head high, protest line, freedom scribbled on your sign. Headline, New York Times, standing on the edge of a revolution. Hey, hey, just obey your secret safe with the NSA. And God we trust, or the CIA, standing on the edge of a revolution.
Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose. The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bones Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge, email kfr@scalpeledge.com, or the website scalpeledge.com.